burial rites. We have established that Sisyphus was no fool. He did not imagine for a second that Thanatos would stay locked in his closet for eternity. Sooner or later, death would be released and set upon his trail once more. In the town villa in which he had made temporary lodging, Sisyphus addressed his wife. After his niece Tyro drowned his sons and left him, he had married again. His new young queen was as kindly and obedient as Tyro had been wilful and contrary. "My dear," he said, drawing her to him, "I feel that soon I shall die. When I have breathed my last and my soul has fled, what will you do?" "I will do what must be done, my lord. I will wash and anoint you. I will place an obolus on your tongue so that you might pay the ferryman. We will stand guard 7 days and 7 nights over your catafalque. Burnt offerings will be sent up to please the king and queen of the underworld. And in this way, your journey to the meadows of Asphodel shall be a blessed one."
"You mean well, but that is exactly what you must not do," said Sisyphus. "The moment I am dead, I want you to strip me naked and have me thrown into the street."
"My lord!"
I'm quite serious, deadly serious. This is my desire, my entreaty, my command. No matter what anyone else says, you will send up no prayers, make no sacrifices, perform no obsequies. Treat my remains as you would those of a dog. Promise me that."
"But..."
Sisyphus took her by the shoulders and looked deep into her eyes to reinforce the earnestness of his commands. "As you love me and are bound to me, as you hope never to be haunted by my angry shade, promise to do exactly as I have said. Swear it on your soul."
I swear it."
"It is good. Now let us drink a toast to life." His timing, as ever, was impeccable, for that very evening Sisyphus was awoken by the whisper of death at his bedside.
"Your time is come, Sisyphus of Corinth."
"Ah, Thanatos, I've been expecting you."
"Do not hope to trick me."
"Me? Trick you?"
Sisyphus stood and bowed in meek submission, putting up his wrists for shackling.
"Nothing could be further from my mind."
The manacles were attached, and the pair glided down to the mouth of the underworld. Thanatos left Sisyphus at the near bank of the Styx and departed, anxious to make headway with the great backlog of souls that were awaiting collection. Charon the ferryman sculled his boat across, and Sisyphus stepped aboard. As he pulled the boat off the bank, Charon stretched out his palm.
"Nothing doing,"
said Sisyphus, patting his pockets.
Without a word, Charon pushed him overboard into the blackness of the Styx. It was cold, abominably cold, but Sisyphus managed to get across. The waters burned and blistered his skin almost beyond endurance, but once he was on the other side, he knew that he presented just such a piteous sight as he had intended. Shades flitted past him, averting their eyes.
"Which way to the throne room?" he asked of one.
Following their directions, he found himself in the presence of Persephone.
"Dread Queen," Sisyphus inclined his head, "I beg an audience with Hades.
My husband is in Tartarus today. I speak for him. Who are you, and how can you dare stand before me in this condition?"
Sisyphus was naked. An ear was torn off, and one of his eyes hung down from its socket. His spectral body was covered in bite marks, welts, bruises, gashes, and open sores, testimony to its physical counterpart's rough treatment on the streets of Corinth above. His wife had obeyed his instructions.
"Madam," he bowed low before Persephone, "no one feels the impropriety of this as keenly as I. My wife, my spiteful, wicked, monstrous, blasphemous wife, it is she who has brought me to this pitiable state. Even as I lay dying, I heard her say to her women, 'We will not waste gold on burial rites. The gods of the underworld are nothing to us. Throw his body outside for the dogs to eat. Spend the money he set aside for his funeral on a great feast. The heifers he kept for sacrificing to Hades and Persephone shall be roasted for our pleasure.' She laughed and clapped her hands, and those, dread queen, were the last sounds I heard in the world." Persephone was outraged. "She dared? She dared? She shall be punished."
"Aye, Majesty, but how?"
"Flayed alive."
"Yes, not bad.
But I say, permit me, wouldn't it be funny?" Sisyphus smiled as an idea struck him. "Wouldn't it be funny if you returned me to the upper world alive?" Imagine her shock. "And I would make sure that every day she paid for her insolence and disrespect. No gold or feasting, nothing but harsh treatment, insults and servitude. I can't wait to see her face when I appear in front of her, alive and well and whole and perhaps even more youthful and vital and handsome than ever. She's only 26, but imagine her torment if I outlived her. I would use her as my slave. Every day would be torture to her."
Persephone smiled at the thought and clapped her hands.
"Let it be so."
The years spent in the underworld had given Persephone a regal pride and rigid belief in the proper running of the infernal kingdom. And thus it was that Sisyphus was led out to the upper world, where he and his delighted queen lived happily ever after. His death, when it finally did come, was another matter.